With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You serious?
Hello, welcome to How to Kill an Hour. My name's Marcus Bronzy. There's plenty of ways to kill some time out there. Thank you for killing some time with us. Before we kick off today's show, I want to show you some love back because we've been getting some great support on social media this week, including the Twitter crew. Hello to Dammy, Liz Jarvis, who really liked our Ford video. We've actually been making some great video content to go alongside our podcast. Very different to the podcast as well. We're not just filming the podcast and putting it out there. We've got some very interesting ways that we're killing time, including taking Ford cars and driving them in some extreme situations. Some of them icy, some of them sand dune-y is what I'm going to say. But yeah, you can check more of those at howtokillanhour.com. Hello to Wayne as well, also loving our videos. Marcel, Angie Lamar, who is Travis J's mum, who was a guest on last week's show. And on last week's show, Travis spoke about one of the most emotional parts of his career being sharing a stage with Dave Chappelle on an impromptu gig. Now, he's managed to level up and open for Dave Chappelle. So it's really worth having a listen to last week's episode to hear him describing his experience of meeting Dave Chappelle and how it kind of propelled him into the environment that he's in now. So that's last week's show. Make sure you check that out. What episode number is that, Billy? Is last week's show?
327.
327. Check that out. Also been getting love on the podcast app. And I'd really appreciate it if you could press like and subscribe and drop us a review on the Apple Podcast app because it helps us to get to more ears. Shout out to Sophie Chang, who said she loves the podcast and chats as well as the tech side of things. Marcus and Funk are the best. Keep up the great work, guys. Thank you very much. Appreciate that, man. So yeah, press subscribe and give us a review. Let us know what you think of the podcast. We'd really appreciate that. Now, before we kick off today's show, we are joined by a comedian, a prankster, somebody who really likes to make an impact with the content they create, Simon Brodkin. We're going to be talking to him in just a moment. But first things first, let's talk about how we've been killing a bit of time. Billy and I have been up to some things between this episode and the one that dropped last week. And let's get through them. First things first, Bill, we have been on electric bikes, on the Volt bikes. They dropped us them like a couple of weeks, just before we did the Ford video, actually, which is why we couldn't speak about them until now. So electric bikes. Now, we've seen a lot of electric vehicles out there, right? And it's fair to say on the forefront of this electric vehicle hype, shall we say, there's some quirky devices. There's like electric skateboards and scooters, isn't it, Bill?
Yes.
But people that have been making electric vehicles for a lot longer are people like Volt, who have been making electric bikes for 10 years now. So when they dropped us off a couple of Volt bikes, they came to us with a chat saying, these are the best electric bikes out there. And I was like, all right, everyone says that. But we actually managed to check out a couple of bikes. So I'd like to share my experience with the Volt. And you had a slightly different model, didn't you, Bill?
Yeah.
Now, because they've been making these for 10 years, they've got some very specific tech. I'll just get through them and let you know what they do, how they're different to different electric bikes. So they've got a SpinTech drive system, right? Which basically, to put it basically, is it kicks in when you need a boost. But if you're going fast enough on your bike, it turns off. So if you're going downhill, there's no need for an electric motor. If you're going uphill, there is need for an electric motor. So it conserves energy, right? And each of the bikes comes with a 250-watt SpinTech motor, which means there's no resistance as you switch between these non-assisted and assisted riding modes. So I'd put it, if I'm slowly going up an incline, the motor slowly kicks in. So it feels like I'm just pedaling the same. I will say with these Volt bikes, though, you do have to pedal. You can't just not pedal and just press go on them.
It's not a motorbike.
Yeah, it's not a motorbike. It's not like... they got an LCD heads-up display, which lets you know where how fast the bike is going, how the battery is doing, what speed mode you're in. Also, you can hold a button on them and turn on some lights, which are good if you're in the UK and you're riding in the winter. Probably not so necessary in the summer, but there's a lot of night riders out there. And it's got 96 volts of Panasonic power. Something, I don't know, it's like, I think you can like do 100 iPhone battery charges on it or something like that. It's ridiculous. If it was an iPhone charger. But yeah, it's really intelligent. It distributes speed as you need it. And it stops distributing it if you don't need it. Sounds cool. But what was our experience? Billy, you had the Metro. What was the difference between the Metro and the one that I had? Like,
My one was like a folding type one.
Yeah, look, Brompton-y.
Brompton type bike. And your one was more of like a mountain bike type one.
Yeah, yeah.
I enjoyed it. It was quick. It was pretty easy to go to like 20, 25 miles an hour. But so I advise wearing a helmet when doing this.
Always safety first.
It didn't feel like 25 miles an hour, but if I hit a wall or I hit a brick and then I fell over, I would feel it, to be honest.
Like a normal bike.
Yeah. Well, on a normal bike, I don't think you'd be able to get up to 25 mile an hour. 10, 15 mile an hour, maybe.
With legs like yours, Billy, surely you could power up to a good 35 miles an hour on those.
35 miles an hour.
Taking peds over.
But yeah, it was good. I mean, the brakes were solid. I didn't feel as if I was in a touch brake. I didn't feel as if it like suddenly stopped me. It stopped me in a safe manner. It wasn't too powerful, but they weren't too soft either.
Yeah, I mean, so the bike, the ride for it was pretty cool. It's a good bike, yeah. But because yours was like a Brompton style, the easiest way to describe what a Brompton is, in case you're not aware, is like a foldable bike. So with a Brompton, it's all about it being super light. People take bits off their Bromptons, exchange them for like aluminium, carbon fiber parts, all in aid of making their Brompton something that they can carry. Now, your Volt Metro, even though it was Brompton in foldability, and folding it was quite easy, right?
Yeah.
How was it? Was it something that you could carry along, or how could you transport around? Could you wheel it around?
I mean, it was still a bit hefty for what it was, to be honest. But transporting it was easy. You could just fold it up and there's like a little bit of elastic you can connect around. It's a bit hard to describe without actually seeing it, but you can fold it up and then connect a bit of elastic somewhere and then drag it rather than carrying it. I mean, if you have to go down some stairs in like a train station, you'd be able to do that.
Okay.
Carrying it any further than that, you'd want to put it down.
Okay.
It is heavy because you've got the big motor on it and the big battery.
So you wouldn't recommend like carrying it, but you can wheel it. Is it kind of like a wheelbarrow kind of thing, but you're pulling it?
Yeah.
And the
or
wheel.
Or
so the
pushing
wheel,
it, yeah.
Or push it. So the wheel can bear the weight and you kind of just have to steer it around, kind of like a trolley. Like a unicycle. Is it like that? Like you're pushing a unicycle
kind of,
around, one wheel. All right, cool. So not the best to carry, but if you can wheel it around, I guess you don't really have to lift it. It's not the sort of thing you can pick up and put on an overhead rack. It's not recommended.
No,
like
I would
that.
Not do that. No, that is, it would be heavy.
All right, wicked. Well, it's got some specs, actually. It's got 8 gear settings, 16-inch aluminium frame, weighs 18 kilograms. That's actually not bad, though, 18 kilograms.
For an electric bike, it's good, but as I say.
Yeah. Okay, and you can get a larger battery size as well if you want to go a bit further on it. Did you find that it helped or hindered your experience traveling, though?
It was a lot quicker to get around places, I will admit that, yeah.
So you'd say it's suitable, because I feel like they've designed this foldable one so that you can ride to the tube station, take it on the tube or the train, and then ride to where you need to get to another side. Did it achieve that? Was it less stress?
Definitely, yeah, but I'd rather just want to cycle to the destination, to be honest.
Do you rather just go all the way on your bike?
Yeah, why not?
Fair enough. I mean, I had the Pulse, which was like the mountain bike version, so I think it had 40 miles of power, and it's got a large battery, which can give you 60 miles an hour if you want to upgrade to that. I don't know which one I had, but because I didn't really think I needed to use it that much. But I'll tell you what, I didn't think I was going to use it as much as I did.
Mm-hmm.
But I realized that I could get into central London slightly quicker than I could if I was to take the train. No joke. It's only like a couple of minutes, but...
Add that up over a week?
Yeah, two minutes times 52, or let's say, that's an hour and a good hour and 40-something minutes. It's not bad throughout a year. But I found it easy to just kind of like know that if I know I can get somewhere, and this was without rushing by just cycling there in 20 minutes, during the summer, that's going to be my choice, bruv, because getting on a sweaty tube is not the one. Plus, I kind of clocked like, I like cycling and I like the fitness aspect of it. And I understand that this takes the fitness aspect of it out, but I'd much rather just cruise into work feeling fresh and not sweating like a pig on a summer's day. And then if I needed to cycle a bit on the way home, I don't know, turn it into a lower power mode and give myself a bit of a challenge to cycle it around. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
But like, I realized how nice it was to just zing along the bit of the canal or ride along, like, you know, a few roads and stuff and just get into West London and just be fresh, bruv. And because I'm not the biggest cycler, right? So cycling, I didn't realize that like there's loads of little bays you can lock up your bike as well. So it's like, there's just like next to a cafe, lock it up here and there. And it comes with a lock as well. Get a lock that's built in with it that locks the wheel. It's like a really high grade chain as well. I don't know how the leveling system works, but it was like a high grade, like top, like you can insure your bike, and this would be the kind of lock that you need to ensure that you have a premium insurance. Yeah, thick chain.
With three C's.
Thick with three C's. I don't know what kind of websites Millie's on out here. Oh. You know what I mean? But, and also, it looked like a bike, bruv. And by the way, guys, I just want to say, to clarify, we've not been paid for this. This was just an editorial review. It looked like a bike as well. So when I parked it outside a cafe with like loads of bikes, it didn't look like, I'm an electric bike that's worth $2,000. Come and nick me, which is the price point of these, right? Well, it can be up to... Actually, let me get the updated price point. Let's go and have a little looky now, because that's quite worthwhile, isn't it? Because I can't remember what your one cost. Do you know the prices, Bill, off the top?
Not off the top of the dome.
Not off the dome. So, the full range. So, Billy was on a Metro 2019, and I was on a Pulse. I believe I was on a Pulse X, which, if you like UK Gram, was a sick tune. So, it starts off at £1,400, and mine starts off at £2,000. So, I know some people would be like, that's pricey, but if it means that you do not have to travel for a year by a train, you can make money back very, very quickly. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely, definitely.
Especially when you get a 40-mile charge on it as well. So those are the Volt bikes. In summary, Bill, I mean, was it worth an hour?
Definitely, yeah.
Was it worth an hour? I feel like it was well worth it. It saves a bit of time. If I was somebody who commuted a lot, I'd seriously consider cycling in every day, knowing that I wouldn't be sweaty. Because I don't know about you, but like London transport or public transport is only getting busier right now. And during these hot summer months, if you're on the wrong line during rush hour, like central line during rush hour, that's like hell, bro. It's just people faint. People pass out on the tube. You know?
Yeah.
It's mad. So I'd rather just cruise somewhere in the sun, not having to cycle. Plus it was sick taking over cyclists because it's got this little it's a little lever you can press to take off. Did you have that on yours as well?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
And then as well as taking off, it gives you a little kick when you're cycling as well. So I saw some like professional cyclists in all their gear, with their lycra and stuff, and I was like just cruising past them like and they were like heads down looking at me like, how's this guy cutting mad speed? Anyway, so those are the Volt bikes. You can check those in the link to the show description for the show, and we're also gonna have links for all the other stuff we're talking about. Now, I love John Wick 3, so I don't want to go on about this too much, Billy, but the guys from Lionsgate UK sent me on a John Wick driving experience. Paul Swift is a sick driver. He does loads of stunt driving, and they invited us down to sit in the Mustang Bullitt, which is an amazing GT car from Ford. It's like a classic design being remastered for 2019. It also features in the John Wick films. So basically, Paul Swift drove us around doing mad burnouts, sick video, had a sick time. I want to drive the Mustang Bullitt is all I'm saying, Bill. I want to drive that car, but I'm going to put it out there in the ether. I want to drive that car. So yeah, you can check that bit of content. And also John Wick, man, I don't want to have to go on about how much I love it. If you ain't seen it yet, go see it. Nick Bright was speaking to me the other day. He told me he was about to go and see it. I need to find out what his experience with that was. Speaking of speed, a geezer. So the Sonic the Hedgehog, we've not spoken about this on the show. So the Sonic the Hedgehog film, they dropped the trailer for it recently. And a lot of people were very pissed off because Sonic in the trailer looked remarkably different to the Sonic that many are used to since the original game dropped. They gave him teeth, which were really human looking. They made his eyes look more realistic. They gave him fur that looked really hair-like. They kind of unwittingly have made him look like a horror movie creature. He looks like something that could, like, this summer,
for lack of a better term,
they fucked him up. Yeah, they fucked him up royally. A geezer basically by himself. I mean, let's big up his YouTube, because this geezer is a G. You're going to hear a bit of the trailer. This geezer, he's proper, man. He's proper. Let's get his stuff.
He's called Arta Baranov.
Yeah. Now, this has had like 11 million hits, this video. He's basically taken the trailer offline. He's ripped it down and he's put in a more cartoon looking Sonic. Now, he's a solo artist who's done this, and he's managed. You've seen the remake trailer, haven't you, Billy?
Yeah.
They've managed. It's not the perfect Sonic, is it? It's not amazing, but by himself,
looks a hell of a lot better than.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How can he put? He's like managed to scrub the old Sonic out and then put his own CGI version in, and it looks bloody good. So this, not as a response to this, but you know the Sonic film's been delayed now because of the backlash.
Yeah, 2020. Well, now there's a bar that's been set. If they don't meet the bars that Art has done, and there's some other people online that have done their own one, if they don't do it as good as them, yeah, you might as well just can that movie. It's like,
well, they need to hire Arta. Don't you think he should get hired? I'd hire him.
Yeah.
Bruv, he's a geezer.
Sign him up.
Sign him up, man. He's if he can do that by himself in a couple of weeks since the trailer dropped, they need to hire him. He could do the whole freaking film, bruv.
Yeah.
Give him a team. Give him one of those new MacBook, the Mac Pros. Jeez, Bill. Can we just touch on that real quick, though?
Behemoth.
Did you watch the Mac announcement yesterday, didn't you?
I didn't watch it, but okay. I read up on it.
There's loads to go on about, but I got some. I know that there were some updates to iOS.
Yeah. Massive screen as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's like $5,000 screen. Or six? No, I think it's four grand screen.
Yeah,
and then the base level of Mac Pro is $5,999.
Yeah, yeah.
So I'm guessing that the fully decked out one's going to be around about $50,000.
$10,000, I'd say. I don't know, but I will say this though, Bill. They had eight 4K movies playing and 1,000 audio tracks playing in Logic. This is the Mac Pro that we've needed.
Yeah,
like real power. Real juice that can't be as easily, because the thing is, people used to say, "Oh, I can get a PC that's twice as powerful for that." But this is probably one of, as we're speaking, obviously things are going to change quick. It's one of the most powerful production.
It's aimed more like that, quote unquote professional movie studio, little movie studios. But I read 1.5 terabytes of RAM. 1.5 terabytes of RAM.
Yeah, I remember sending one of the geezers in the office here the stats for it. Love, I found it. This is me nerding out on the stats, but you need to understand that this is absolutely
insane. A ridiculous amount of RAM.
Well, to put it in perspective, how much RAM you got in that laptop that's in front of you now?
I think it's something ridiculous like eight gigs.
8 gigs.
Let me have a look. Yeah, 8 gigs of RAM.
Yeah, I've got 16 in this that's sitting in the studio with us. This has 28 core Intel processor. Yeah. 28 cores, right? That is nuts, right? 1.5 terabytes of RAM. That definitely trumps your 8 there. And you can get into it and mess around with the innards.
Yeah, it's modular.
They've made that easy for you as well, which is quite important for them. And they played, they said it runs 20% faster than a Windows workstation with maxed out with some quite good graphics cards. And Apple showed it playing 8K video and 1,000 tracks in its Logic Pro music software. 1,000 tracks.
Too good.
I don't know who needs a track with 1,000 layers, but yeah, have we got a rundown on the website for it?
Yeah, if you go on the website, there will be a rundown of the Mac Pro.
Okay, cool. Yep, check that all out. So this guy redone Sonic. I mean, give him a Mac Pro and he'll be able to knock out a new Sonic trailer that looks like he'll be able to do the whole film.
2 days.
Exactly. And before we get on Sunbrooking as well, speaking of Sonic, Bill, we our new feature, Worth an Hour, where we play a game and let you know whether it's worth an hour of your time. Team Sonic Racing was on the cards. So, Team Sonic Racing, go.
It's an enjoyable game. It's very enjoyable. It's very different to like a regular racing game where it's just like you on your own, start to finish. If you win, if you come first, you win.
Yeah.
This is more based on teamwork than it is on overall race position. Race position does come into play, but it's all done on how well you work together as a team. So if you was to win and your teammates were to finish in last and penultimate last, there's no guarantee that you're going to be the overall winners of that race.
Right. So you have to do well as a team. So it's not like all about I and me. It's about you kicking ass as a team. Wow. All right. Cool. So we're kind of used to, and I like racing games that are like this as well, kind of like computer game character driven racing games, you know, like the likes of your Mario Karts and stuff. How does this differ to that? Because I know that's going to be the big comparison. Yeah, that's what we're going to talk about.
You've got things like your weapons and stuff. In this game, is called Wisps. You've got like your rockets and your cubes and ghosts and stuff like that.
They're called Wisps.
So, yeah, so it's very similar, but it's different in a way. You've got like your boost bits on the bottom. And as I'm going back on the teamwork, a lot of it focuses on boosting. So if you drift, you gain boost. But if you, like in Formula One, you see like the Lewis Hamilton and Bottas line up behind one another to go inside their slipstream so they're not in the dirty air.
Yeah.
In this one, if you go behind them, you charge up your boost bar, and if you come outside the slipstream, you will slingshot forward.
So if you're going down a straight, when I cruise behind your car for a little while, and I get in the right, I stay in your slipstream for a bit, I can then cut around, use that boost to cut around you.
Yeah.
Because you're cutting through the air for me.
Yeah.
And I'm like riding behind you, and I get a little, nice, okay, cool. And what are the power-ups like? Are they kind of like, you know, usual, knocking, slowing people down, knocking them, making them small? That sort of stuff.
Well, not necessarily making them smaller, just because they Team Sonic have their own specific ones, but they is like that. And if what the feature I liked about it is, sometimes I personally weren't too much of a fan of the ghost one. So if I got the ghost one, I could press circle or B on Xbox or whatever the corresponding button is on Nintendo Switch. If you push that button, you can give it to a teammate. So I don't want this one, you can have it. Or if you don't have you don't have a power up and you're a bit of a sticky position, say you're on the last corner and there's a racer just gone past you, you need a rocket or something, or something to give to you, push circle, they'll give you a weapon or a boost, and then you can use that to like, obviously win the race.
Okay. And have we got online for this as well?
Yes, there is online, yep.
So you can jump online and me and you could take over the world. Is it cross-platform yet, or is it?
I don't think it's cross-platform, no. There's not a lot of games out there that are cross-platform.
Yeah. We've just got to be asking that now, haven't we, when it comes to multiplayer games. It's just a convo. It's what people are expecting now. So what about the levels and stuff? Were they very Sonic themed?
So you could tell that the tracks are Sonic, to be honest. Yeah, they are like, you got your there's a specific level that you do where you have to collect rings. So you know, on like regular Sonic, you just go around and collect rings. This particular one, you have to get as many as you can within a certain time frame. And also in the actual normal racing games, there is coins that you can pick up, or rings, should I say, you can pick up as you go around.
Oh, sick. All right. Yeah, rings. That does sound very appropriate. So, speed modes in it. Sonic is known for being a fast character, so we've got like different speeds and stuff.
Yeah, so rather than you can pick up speed boosts and stuff like that, but each particular racer has their own specific speed that you can have. So each race will either be a technical racer, a speed racer, or a power racer. And obviously, Sonic would be, as you would expect, a speed racer.
A speed racer. How hard is it to play then? Is there like some difficulty modes that we can sort of fiddle around with to get warm with the game?
There's normal, hard, and expert. And then I thought, okay, this particular game, Team Sonic, I would say is aimed at more of a younger audience. I thought, okay, maybe I'll go for hard and see how well I do. See how far I can win.
Yeah.
I done hard and I didn't. I didn't win. I lost every time.
Same. All right, cool. All right, so is it worth an hour of time then?
Definitely, yeah. So if you've got like a bunch of mates together, you can go online, team up and race together. I'd say it's definitely worth an hour of your time.
Sort of thing you could jump on for an hour before you go out for a drink with the boys or something like that.
Just jump on, give it an hour and then pop out again. It's a lot of fun.
Right, so that's how we've been killing time this week. We have got some cool shizzle coming up, and E3 is around the corner as well. And we're going to be covering that in a very interesting way. So that's how we're going to be killing time moving forward. Anyway, we are in the studio with Simon Brodkin. This show is called How to Kill an Hour. We talk about different ways to kill time. So the first thing we've got to say to Simon is, yo, how do you like to kill some time?
Most of my time recently has been spent working on this new Edinburgh show that let's go straight into the marketing. Let's just bang
just
in
it.
Straight
just
there. Fuse
crack
it
on,
in.
Mate.
First
crack
question,
crack
first
on.
Answer. Yeah. Tickets available. See the following website, Instagram, Twitter, and I'm out of here later.
Yeah, cool. See, so, that's How to Kill an Hour. Thank you very much. Yeah.
How to Kill 60 Seconds.
Yeah.
So I'm coming off the back of a huge Lidl.
Yeah.
And, you know, so my life is basically, I'm just thinking about how I'm spending my life now with that one open-ended question. You should be a shrink. I'm like suddenly thinking, I'm wasting my life. What am I doing? So that's been a lot of traveling. That's been like the biggest tour that I've done, like 180 dates up and down. I mean, they're not every night, and there's been you know, big gaps between. There's been first leg, second leg, third leg, and then a big Edinburgh stretch as well in the middle of that, and that's gone on for, I don't know, 2 years on and off, which is great because it means people are buying tickets. And but in my spare time, I have been working on this new thing for me, although obviously I've done the stunts, so that's most of them out of character.
Yeah.
Some in character, some a bit of a character, and but this new thing of doing stand up as myself, which has been occupying my time because it is a big thing.
Yeah. And this is you. This is Simon Brodkin being
Simon Brodkin, which is even weird for me at first, just going, please welcome to the stage, Simon Brodkin. I'm like, oh, Jebs, it's me.
Yeah. Because this is like your first Fringe show as Simon Brodkin, but you're no stranger to Edinburgh Fringe. You've done, I'm trying to count them, it's like seven, eight, is it, how many shows? Is it six? Seven?
You know, I stopped making etchings on the bed, on the wall, but that's about right.
It's seasoned.
Seasoned pro.
That's it,
yes.
Yeah.
So not eligible for the newcomer award anymore.
Nah, sorry,
but guys,
mate,
this is new because I'm doing. Please. So I went up there first. I don't know how many years ago, but over 10. And that was a multi-character show, and one of those characters was Lee.
Yeah, yeah.
So I was never just about Lee. And in fact, in that show, I was sort of being myself. The show was Simon Brodkin, everyone but himself. And I was doing a sort of pseudo-intellectual sort of Edinburgh performer, a breakdown of what comedy is. It was all a load of nonsense, full of jokes, of course. And then Lee was in there, and there were a few other characters. And then, to cut a long story short, Lee sort of took off after another Edinburgh, and then that was the character that I've been best known for.
Yeah.
And that was the one most suited to live, and that was the one took off, and then had the BBC Three series. I'll just keep reading out my CV.
Crack on. Tickets are selling as
with my management.
Yeah, that's it.
And then the stunts, as I say, was sort of a bit more me, but never stand up comedy is me. Never straight stand up, never getting on stage. Here, welcome, Simon Brodkin. Talk about you, be you, tell jokes as you.
Okay, so we've gone from everyone but Simon show to Simon and no one else.
That is a beautiful symmetry that I had not thought about. Yes, it's now called, the show is 100% Simon Brodkin.
There we go. So
and there were about 300 titles I went through, so just that's I'm sticking with that one now. There's no going back.
100% Simon. Go for it, mate. Wait, can I get a little bit of that, or is that already decided before you got here? Can I get a little change on that, or a little percentage, or
what you mean, the actual post has gone to print?
Fuck's sake.
Oh, we're allowed to swear?
Yeah, of course.
Oh, fucking get in, you bunch of cunts. That's too much, isn't it?
No, not at all. Okay. We got questions lined up for you that you might have that response to anyway.
Being BBC best behaviour.
Oh, no, fuck that. Yeah, yeah, no, we've all done BBC. This is a privately owned podcast.
Proper.
It's got explicit on the label, yeah.
This is adult.
Throw as many cunts in as you want. So what's it going to be like? Because I think because Lee was such a big character, a lot of people, when they see you, they see Lee Nelson. And probably some people presume that that is who you actually are. So what's the difference with this show going to be like? What am I getting? Because it's not the same thing. So if I've been to a Lee show last month or the month before, it's totally different.
Lee is absolutely that. He is a character. And obviously, the more you do a character, the more you have to fill him in. And he can't just be a two-dimensional thing, especially doing stand-up comedy, because he has to live within the room.
Yeah.
And that is sort of the definition of stand-up,
where
the audience can take part, which is why it's just an amazing art form, guys, because you go to the theatre and shout, "Oi, Brodkin, you're a wanker!" And there'll be outrage from the guys. Whereas in stand-up comedy, you've got to deal with that, and if you don't, you are a worse comic because of that. And there's something kind of beautiful about that. You have to, you know. And some MCs get on stage and say, "Can we please no talking to the act, no this, no that?" And I get why they're doing that. That's because they want the acts to get on with their act. But in some ways, there is a beautiful thing where audience members, and you have to be a bit of a dick to interrupt, let's be honest, or, you know, certain substance through your system where you feel like, you know what is going to be so funny about this, well, look at this, hey, and then you come out. So Lee had to live and breathe, and obviously as the years went on, he couldn't just be 100% a, you know, council estate sort of point of view. And he was never hateful, he was always loving, and he was always full of joy, and it just happened that he lived in that circumstance, and he was never trying to punch down, it was always a celebration. And obviously then he sort of had, in inverted commas, success, because he can't have success, he's a made up fella, but, you know, live at the Apollo and hosting that and being on a few big things, and suddenly went out from the shorts and the cap to, which felt weird to carry that on, because suddenly I was going, he should have a bit of money, shouldn't he? He's been a bit. I mean, I'm having most of it, but give him a bit, and we're going out and got him a suit, and we admittedly it still had the security tag on, but he had to start talking about things in the world and start having to address, you know, a few basic things, and even, you know, recently with, I don't know, Brexit, you know, he had to talk about that, you know, I voted Leave, I regret it quite a lot, I thought there was asking us about Scotland, and, you know, the stuff Donald Trump comes out with, oh my god, you know, what's he say, grab women by the pussy, once you've been on television they let you get away with him. I couldn't believe I listened to him. So he had to start talking in the real world. And so he grew up a little bit, but he is always a character. He is not real, you know? And yeah, because I've been doing him so long, and I guess it's a bit of a compliment, the fact that people do think I am Lee. So when people see me in the street, most of the time they say Lee. I mean, it's happened twice in 4 years. But when they stop me, they say Lee. And so, you know, to come out of that and be oneself is suddenly opens up a whole new paint palette and different colors to paint with, and suddenly you can talk about anything and talk about the things that you care about and the things that are real. And, you know, I'm a dad, and I've done and in the show there's, I talk about one of the stunts, which is on Donald Trump, where I scattered hundreds of swastika emblazoned golf balls around his feet. If you've got a problem with that, just have a look at some of the things he's said about Muslims and Mexicans. And anyway, out of that came this whole barrage of hatred to me on social media, which at the time I never really thought about because it was just part and parcel. But now, being me, I've suddenly thought, hang on, there was some virulent anti-Semitic hatred coming my way, and I was outed by the Grand Wizard of the KKK, David Duke, as a Jew. And to be honest, I already knew. So I was...
you were aware of it.
I was aware. It'd be funny if that was how people found out whether they were Jewish or not.
Yeah.
Is David Duke on the phone, honey? It's the Are You a Jew or Not a Jew call. Oh my God, I'm so nervous. I really like my whole Willy.
You are.
And out of that comes being able to actually talk about that stuff. Yeah. And suddenly that's exploring who I am and things that are relevant to me, because I'm, you know, I'm addicted to the news and I'm addicted to what's going on in the world. Like most people, if you care about things, you're going to be a bit plugged in. And so I'm able to now talk about that stuff, talking about being a dad and how, you know, when my wife went away and left me with the kids for a week for the first time, she went to America with her mum to see relatives. And what I realized about a couple of hours in is that for the last 9 years, my wife behind my back has been doing all the childcare. And, you know,
rude awakening there.
Yeah, exactly. So just talking about those things and talking about, you know, which is kind of cool.
Yeah. And plus, you've kind of got all of these years and all of these air miles, shall I say, in comedy. So you are a seasoned comedian. And I don't say that lightly. Plus, I feel like you've got a totally fresh, it feels like you're building it up again from the bottom. Do you know what I mean? So is that quite an exciting feeling to feel like you've just got this whole new set of elements that people aren't ready to experience yet?
100%. It feel, not only does it feel like I'm starting again, it literally had to be starting again from the basics of going back on the circuit. And the circuit's unbelievable. I think we are blessed in this country to have, you know, everyone says, you know, the work going on in their country is the best.
America!
Yeah.
America, yeah.
Well, I'm not good, but I think the circuit, the stand-up comedy circuit in this, in London, I believe from talk to people what it's like, even parts of America, is the best. And almost any night of the week, you can find 2-3 on the weekend, 10-15 places to do stuff. And I was just back to the drawing board and back. And stand-up's this weird thing because it is an apprenticeship. Like, there's not many other jobs where you go, do you want to become that thing? Just turn up and have a little go. You know, and I'm a qualified doctor, so thank goodness they just throw that in. Check that in, yeah.
PhD on the wall.
Still doing some private work. you know, imagine just going into that, going, I just want to have a go at being a doctor. Well, listen, grab the scalpel.
Yeah.
You can have 5 minutes before the main doctor's going to come back on and get the knife off you, and we'll just see how it goes down.
I mean, and you could fuck up totally, but you know what? You'd be fine.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly.
It's all right. Come out in a wash. You know
exactly.
I mean?
This is how people learn in this job, okay?
Yeah.
And so you, with stand-up, you learn. So to a certain extent, I had all these air miles on me. I don't know what you're saying. You're calling me old. I get that. No. No, I've been doing, I'm fairly experienced stand-up, but it's as in character, and it's just different. There is just this you know, mindset, and this way of, obviously way of speaking, and just way of walking, the way, everything, the way you hold the microphone, the way you address the crowd, the way the whole thing, I have been programmed, that is my muscle memory as a live performer, to be Lee. And so, although all that experience has some relevance, I'm not saying it was totally starting again, but to go and go, now it's time for Simon Brodkin. Like, oh my God, how do I hold the microphone? How do I sound? What do I talk about? And it really was like starting again. And I've had some humiliating nights on the way, because obviously when you step on and you're sort of a little bit known, especially by the comics, and you go, right, he's been a bit shit, isn't it?
This is the worst Lee Nelson I've seen. Nothing like him. What the fuck is that?
Well, occasionally there's been like, oh my God, I'd like to have like, I mean, I'm out of that now. I'm out. But at first, the first few gigs, it was like, I wish I had this cap in a glass.
Yeah.
Saying break in case of emergency. You are, you legends, I'm back. Phew. So it's been going back, learning the craft again from a different point of view, and then a whole wealth of experience and wealth of life that I'm able to now start to talk about. So I'm excited about it.
I look forward to it, man. I look forward to seeing you on the stage more, because it's like, with you, I think that the other elements of your comedy that you've kind of expressed are way, it's like, I don't want to call Lee Nelson not deep, but he's an entertaining character. You go and laugh at him, and whilst he'll have some jibes that have got political elements to them, like you said, you spoke about Brexit and Trump, this whole other side of you, Simon, is like, you do some things that are funny, but they're deep. Like, you mentioned like the Trump prank, right? This is no light thing. You got around the secret fucking service, bruv. Yes, this isn't like, I'm not over exaggerating at all. You got around the secret service and managed to pull a prank on somebody, right? So if you can, just to put this into perspective, because I want to know how you break down these pranks. Like, you're not meant to go and throw anything at the president, right? You managed to throw a selection of things which were round shaped that could have exploded at some point, right? But you managed to do it as a prank. We'll get back to that in a sec. But like, when you're setting up your pranks, I felt like during the show, I was watching a heist scene from a movie. Can you just explain to our listener how you set your pranks up, how you managed to get around security and stuff like that? Because it's no small task. You don't just go, oh, right, I'm going to turn up on the day and fuck around. You actually do research and stuff, right?
Yeah. You said listener. I'm hoping there's going to be more than one.
You know, we just address our listener, because you know what, you know, on YouTube you go, hey guys, I'm like,
yeah. I see the bloke sitting outside on the chair.
It's me.
Should we just invite him in?
It's me. I'm talking to myself. I always talk to the listener as a listener, because it's like one person listening at a time.
That's
nice. It's intimate. Do you know what I mean?
That made me suddenly worried. I'm like, really? Let's just bring him in. Let's just take the cans off our head. Let's just chat. Let's involve them.
All right, come in, mate. Come in, Paul.
Colin.
Yeah.
So the pranks are, something, look, with anything in life, if you're going to do it well, it's not easy.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, we've all seen prank shows, and God love them, they've got more viewing figures than me, where people have hidden in a bin and jumped out when old ladies thrown a chocolate wrapper in and going, gotcha!
Yeah, and everyone's like, sick! Yeah, amazing! Yeah, genius! Yeah. Yeah.
What she doesn't know is that Adam is hidden in the bin. Just wait. Just wait, and here it goes. So, what I'm trying to do, I love that moment where real life and comedy come together.
Mm.
And obviously, you can, you know, say you can get that in a stand-up comedy club, and you can, because it's a real person with the real things coming together in the real world. But if you can get for example, let's take the Theresa May one, the P45.
Oh, fucking hell. Right, yeah, go.
So, you know, the thought of you've got this prime minister who had just announced that she was strong and stable. She had a majority in the House of Parliament. And then she went for a walk with Philip. Do you remember that? She came back from that walk with Philip and said, I don't know whether she took some shrooms or what she ate in that field, but she was like,
she hit the blunt. She hit the blunt, bro. Hit the blunt.
She doesn't inhale, but she had one lug. And she then said, you know, let's have this election, which is obviously an absolute crossroads for her. Strong and stable. Suddenly, no majority in Parliament. She was looking. I mean, the fact that she's clung on for this long is quite something. But, and I was suddenly thinking, you know, a lot of people are thinking she shouldn't really be in this job. She is anything but what she's saying. And that's, you know, if take away all the policies that I just, you know, cannot agree with, no matter who is representing them. And I thought, you know, so let's just think there's a little mood in the country going, we want to get rid of the prime minister. Wouldn't it be funny if, instead of shouting and screaming about it, just politely give someone, like you would in every other job, a P45. And then from that moment, you've got the, okay, is that possible? How is it possible? Where is it possible? What do I need to do it? And from that moment on, it turns into that high style feel, which you saw in the Channel 4 documentary where they followed me for a year, which didn't include that one, but did include Trump and Britain's Got Talent and Philip Green, one on
that was naughty as well.
Yeah. Hopefully they're all naughty.
Yeah. Oh, very. Oh,
you don't want to do a prank. It was great stuff. It was very naughty.
It wasn't very naughty. It was,
you got his permission for that one. So, from that moment where you've got all these, the central idea, and then you've got springing off it, just hundreds of questions and working out and permutations. And that is where it gets, you know, a little, Ocean's 11 like, and you've got things on the wall and working out and times and things, because you are dealing with relentless, never ending list of unknowns, because you're not meant to be there, and because the thing you are meant to be doing is not meant to happen. And because you're often doing things a little illegal, there's just so many, you don't know the answer. You don't know the answer to that. So it's if that and if that and what about that, and always thinking. And because I think I've got one of those minds that's always like double thinking, can it, want it, whiz it, well, what if, what, which is great. Not great for sleeping at night. But, but great.
Have I locked the back door? Yeah. Have I locked the back door? Did I lock all 15 of the locks or just 14? Fuck. Yeah.
That was you.
Yeah, every night. Yeah. Me and my listener.
Yeah. Get him to check.
They're allowed out the basement.
So, and then from there, that's, you know, and even on the day, you know, for example, that one where I went along, and then that was given to at the Tory party conference. Obviously, the sort of funny thing about that is to get past Donald Trump. Security took, you know, months of planning and fake names and disguises and bag swaps and getting past the CIA, the FBI and Secret Service and his own personal bodyguards. And to, when I gave Theresa May the P45 to get past her security, I applied for a ticket.
Big difference.
Yeah. Yeah, using my name. That hurt a little bit. No. Hosted Live at the Apollo. Killing our podcast. Nah, nothing.
Nah. Oh, from now on. Oh, yeah, you're on all sorts of lists, mate. Yeah,
if Colin's on the door, I'm screwed. And that's why they're kind of fun and I think enjoyable to watch, because there's that there's that will it won't it happen, and you don't know until that actually happens. And the Donald Trump one, funnily enough, I should have been the most worried of all of them that I was going to get shot, because the police did tell me they were about to draw arms. They heard it on their radios. But I wasn't thinking about that at all because I was just worried about the next phase of the stunt. Whereas the Theresa May one, I was a little more worried because at that stage, before I was giving it to her, I thought, okay, you know what? I think this is now in place. And as soon as you've got that little spare brain space, then you can start to worry. But before that, yeah. I didn't even think about that with Donald Trump because there was this one key moment I didn't know would happen until it actually happened.
Yeah. Like, I mean, to say that you're not dedicated to a prank would be a lie, mate.
Cause
you went all in. And I don't want to spoil it because, I mean, I'd love to put a link to it in the show description, but the bag swap that you mentioned, all the little elements that you put in place, it's just amazing. But also, I'm like, was it you and a couple of people that were together in on the prank? I know you had cameramen, but without them.
So it's always been me, myself, and I. And sometimes that's bad. I mean, look, I talk to people. I will say, yeah. You know, I'll have a couple of close, confidants or whatever they're called, without sounding pretentious, but who I will speak to and say, look, bounce, would you? And they'll just, but it is me, myself, and I doing the thing. And that's great because I like, part of the reason I hated medicine is because you're in the NHS, and the NHS is the ultimate huge machine, and you are this teeny, teeny little cog. And to change anything, forget about it, because it is just no chance. Oil tanker slowly chugging along. And you're pulling a sinking thing, yeah. Because of the Tories, it's a little bit. There's been just 10 years of horrible. It's proper fuck. To sum it up, just hearing through, it is proper fuck.
Yeah, my official input on that.
It's proper fuck. It's not on its hands and knees. It's on its it's not on its knees. It's on its hands and knees. 100%. Getting fucked.
Yeah. 100%.
But it's this amazing thing, and obviously it's incredible. But me as someone in there, always asking questions, always do we have to? And you forget about this, and then you go to stand up comedy, and you are the writer, the performer, the director, the producer, everything. So if something goes wrong, I mean, obviously every stand up, including myself, it's the audience, it's the room,
yeah, of course,
it's the microphone,
yeah, of course it is. Yeah,
it was
yeah,
too. There's a humidity too in many, him. I'm never performing in that place again. The comedy store, it's too humid. So and the beauty again when you do stunts is it's all on me,
yeah,
and that's great because sometimes when you rely on someone else, did you do that? Oh, I forgot. Or there's just, I know that the buck stops with me,
yeah,
and that is in you calls to be very nimble on your feet, because when you're in places you're not meant to be, the last thing you want to do is go, okay guys, all nine of us, let's quickly sneak and move sides. It's on the Theresa May one,
yeah.
I'd gone to they'd have these sessions at party conference.
Yeah.
And so I think the session before her, off memory, was Boris Johnson. And so I was in there, casing the joint, and just checking it out and working out how I was thinking of doing it, and then felt reasonably confident, came back for the next session. And I've got to thank, there was a lady there, because you're queuing up for hours. You're with all these diehard Tories. I think anyone who attends party conference of whatever party, they're a little bit, just a little bit, you know, not completely the most normal, sociable of people. They're fans, real hardcore fans, not of Liverpool or Manchester City, but, you know, come on, Conservatives, come on, like that they.
Yeah.
And so, and obviously you can imagine the sort of people you get at the Tory party conference. So, and I went there, and basically they all are desperate to be as close to the leader, whoever's, you know, giving the big talk of that conference. And so they are properly, it's handbag whacking time. And you're there and you're queuing for ages. And I got to thank this one lady who I just strung her the biggest bunch of lies that I think I've ever come up with in my life, just because she was just talking and talking and talking. I mean, when they start asking you, where do you live? And then you've got to make that. But then it goes a stack of lies when you're with someone for hours. Go, so who's your local MP? Oh, you know, I'm at the Tory party conference telling them I'm a massive fan of the Tories, and I'm dressed up as this sort of Tory boy, you know, yeah, absolutely love it. Yeah, you know, and so who's your local MP then, dear? I'm like, let me just quickly go to the toilet and Google it. And she was brilliant, because when we started going in, she found a little route passed everyone else and was able to get us like really close to the front. So God bless her, this lovely lady who I talked nonsense for like 2 or 3 hours and helped me get that seat at the front. She must feel a teeny bit guilty
as
well.
She must hate you.
She must hate you. Yeah. It might not have twigged yet. It might not have twigged.
Yeah.
So, and I got this great seat exactly where I needed to be, having seen Boris Johnson speak in the session before, because they chuck everyone out and reset the room. With security and whatnot, and then I could go in, and they'd changed the whole thing around. So I'm sitting in the seat that was perfect, and I'm like, oh my God, they've swapped it for the Prime Minister. So all the cameras were on the other side, all the channels were on the other side, as in channels for me to physically walk through.
Yeah.
And so all those little things, those little last minute things, being one person is amazing, because instead of going, okay guys, everyone up, let's excuse me, like 10 of you walking to the other end of the cinema in a packed cinema, you can just quickly, lightly walk around and move, and so being a one-man show is actually really useful, obviously, for the Channel 4 thing. Channel 4 basically followed me for the year, and right. which was cool. But you know, I didn't have like a sort of 007, was it Minority Reports with Tom Cruise, with like 40 people with screens and
yeah.
Shit.
But you pulled off a big feat. You're probably one of the only people that's managed to bamboozle that many independent security services worldwide. You do know that, right? I mean, there's no official world record for that, but you've got to be one of the only people that's publicly known that's done that. Do you know what I mean?
Love there to be the one. And congratulations for being the world record holder of and we didn't invite him here tonight. He has to break in to prove his worth to collect his award.
And the winner is me.
Nice reveal.
But I think if you weren't who you were, you probably would have been offed right now. That's not even a joke. So if I was sitting there and I was like head of a security service of some sorts, I'd be like, this fucking prick.
Yeah,
it's only a matter of time till he gets us or someone else. Let's just get rid of him. Simon Brooking, lead. Oh, we're fucked.
Yeah. Well, I'm surprised I haven't got a call from someone in the security. You know, like when they ask the hackers.
Yeah, man.
To them work for the bank or whatever. I'm surprised. But you know what I mean? You can't trust a comedian, can you? You can't. If there's an opportunity there, I'm like, I did put a whoopee cushion on Trump's chair. That was me. It's funny.
That'd be sick. That'd be a sick show if you were like just doing some comedy during one night and the other night you were just, I don't know, in Alaska.
Security.
Killing somebody. I don't know. Sick. Fucking sick twist.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role. Like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Another element that I've seen from you is your roasting element. I'll be honest with you. I rewatched the roast battle that you did with Dame Baptiste. You popped on the show.
Yeah, that was my debut as me on the telly.
Simon, man, it's like now you're saying it's your debut. Like I understand because it's like on roast battle, people come with a point to prove, and I think Dane's good, right?
He's great. He was great.
So when I think
he did me. He did me that night. I think he had a good one.
I've not broken it down to points. I think it was no clear winner, right? Yeah, but I think he did well. But like, as your first reveal as Simon on TV, I feel like the fact that you went for Jimmy Carr as well, one of the hosts, while you were roasting, that was very sexy. That was very sexy. How was it coming out there and being yourself and talking about coming on someone's twin sister? But anyway.
You really are allowed to say what you like on this show. So let's read out the lines.
Yeah.
So that was... look, I think they saw me doing a tiny little gig in a little comedy club in Angel, trying out stuff. This was, you know, months and months ago when I was just starting out to do stuff as myself out of character. And they said, yeah, come on, roast battle. We'd like to have you. I'm thinking, fine, you know, like, what's going to be the problem with that? But actually, it's like in boxing terms, it's like bare knuckle, no holes barred. You know, it's brutal. Oh, it's a little bit like, it reminds me, because you've got Jimmy there, Jimmy Carr, and you've got, who else have you got? You've got, who are the other two judges?
Catherine Ryan.
Catherine Ryan, Jonathan Ross. Thank you,
Colin. Sorry, we've got Billy there. Cheers, Bill. Thanks. We knew that. Thanks. Thanks, Bill.
AK, the listener. Catherine Ryan, Jonathan Ross and Jimmy Carr, all brilliantly funny, all brilliantly successful, and they're sat high up in this it's like a sort of it's not a theatre, it's like they've put some seats in South London in the Apollo, or I don't know, anyway, it's this little club venue, and it's all quite metallic and brutal, and you've got these three judges up there, and then they bring on the two, you know, normally newer comics, especially compared to them. And so it's a little bit reminds me of, and then we just battle it out to the death, and it sort of reminds me in Rome, you know, where you've got Caesar, like, who wants to see one slave freed? And the crowd like, rah, kill each other, and everyone's going, yeah, death, 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 and they're watching and laughing on. It's pretty brutal. It is pretty.
There's no holding back.
And what we actually said to each other, let's not really tell each other what we're doing.
Oh, great. So you had no idea.
In hindsight, I probably would have said to each other, you know what, let's just make it good.
Yeah.
Let's just practice our lines on each other. But there we're like, no, this is going to be proper. This is sport. It's like telling the goalkeeper which way you're going to shoot just to make the save look spectacular.
Yeah.
This was like, we're going to take this seriously, mate. And it's, you know, you got, it's fun. Look, it's a laugh. And yeah, I did have a little go at Jimmy, and I think at Catherine and Jonathan, I think they, I don't know how many made it in, but Jimmy was amazing. I mean, Jimmy was lovely. He was really supportive, and he texted me after the show saying, you're right, just checking you're right, mate. you know it's been brutal when that happened, when Jimmy Carr, heart of stone, you know, Jimmy Carr texts you, are you all right, Simon? Kiss, kiss, kiss.
He's fucking with you. Jimmy was like, yeah, what can we do to wind him up? You're right, mate. You're right, don't cry, yeah, mate.
Exactly.
Right, but yeah, no, it was good, man. Like, just to put it in perspective for you, the listener, Jewish man versus black man.
Jewish man versus black man.
No fucking around.
No dicking around. Dame beforehand was like, Dame was great. He played all the right games. He played the mental games beforehand. He was like, I'm not going to mention anything about you being Jewish. I'm like, you sure? He's got, yeah.
Did he?
Shout out number one. And this didn't make it into the show, because it's like eight rounds and they chop it down to four, whatever. It was like, your dead granddad is rolling in his mass grave. I'm like, mother, you told me you weren't mentioning, what the mum?
Yeah, but like, I think in this day and age where I feel like sometimes a lot of comedians are challenged with the controversial things they say, they've made a perfect environment for you guys to just go off the rails and take it into the stratosphere.
It's fun.
But he really went for the mass grave joke.
He went in hard on the mass grave. And look, don't blame me, that's what it's about.
Yeah.
But he played the mind games beforehand.
You know,
it's like when a tennis player, you know, is limbering up and they pretend they've got a hamstring injury, a little bit tense. Yeah. First serve, straight down. What?
You know, what a geezer. Man, so how far away does this feel from your like life of medicine then, man?
Well, again, you know, medicine is something that I had not thought about or engaged with for a long time, or thought about myself doing it. Obviously, I've still got medic mates, all of whom are, well, they've gone through the jealousy phase now. They're just resigned to it. Wish we'd have left. Doing the show as me, suddenly, like, you know what? I was a doctor. That's sort of quite interesting.
Yeah.
And talking about, what that was like, and having, and my problem was I couldn't take anything seriously. And, when grown men show you their testicles,
this is cold, mate.
That's, yeah, he's like, what? You show me a dick. And that's like the least you want from your doctor, to just not laugh in your face.
I don't think I want anyone to laugh at my penis. You just don't want, I don't want someone to look at my brain.
Is there ever an appropriate time, just where you get your dick out and people just go, oh, I know, elephant impression, when you get the pockets out.
Oh, yeah, there you go. Oh, yeah, yeah. All the time.
Oh, that was just me. Yeah. So, and what that was like, and and it is fun to think about that, and telling a few stories, and how working late night shifts in A&E, we used to call them Weatherspoon's after parties. One time someone fell into the canal and nearly drowned, and I thought, how about we put him in a bowl of rice? And so it was never the perfect feel for me. Not that I don't love that whole thing and science and biology, and it still absolutely fascinates me, and all the learning and I love that. I love the patient interaction, but it's you've got to really want it to stay in it, because it's not a bed of roses. But it was more the pull of comedy, going, give that a go. And how I was chatting to someone about it the other day, again starting doing these interviews and talking about my real life suddenly, which is new, and go, basically I decided to do comedy and then just ended medicine, just drove to London, just said, right, I'm gonna be a comedian now. Which obviously, in hindsight, what? Don't be an idiot, mate. Man.
What's like the weirdest ailment?
What do you want me to look at? This is always Liam. What do you want me to have a look at? A lump, a bump?
I'm just about to get my dick out. I don't want it to be laughed at.
I promise you, I've got out my system.
But what's the weirdest ailment that you've had? I don't know if this is like breaking
as in
the doctor's code. No, that you've seen. Like, what's the weirdest thing someone's whipped out, apart from a comedic penis?
You know what? They're all comedic. Like, willies are funny, right? I mean, you know, Adam Kay, who is an ex-medic turned comedian and a friend of mine, and he's written that book, This Is Gonna Hurt.
Yeah.
Like, sold 12 zillion copies, and he's just packed with stories and funny moments and anecdotes. And I think back to my time, like, I got like half a page, maybe. I've got like, he is just bursting with them. I got a terrible memory, and I probably should have written down a few more at the time.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I've done some bad things. I remember, it's funny to me, and it's not funny to the patient. Let's be honest. Well, of course, I did that whole Dr. Bob character that came out of that, which was this incompetent doctor who had just no idea what he was doing, and the power that he yielded over patients just because he was a doctor. That was all off the back of doctors who I worked with. But there was one time back in the day, when you're a junior doctor, you are really a little bit of a dog's body. You're going around and you're doing little odd jobs here and there, and you're suddenly on your first night shift and you're like the only doctor on, and like, doctor, we need you. They bleep you. There's this bleep. It's like, obviously, classic NHS, like, so, using a system that was last used in the real world in 1991 by drug dealers in Los Angeles with a pager. And here, that is the system. I think it is still the system. Bleeps. In fact, I heard someone tell me the other day that it was that the NHS is the biggest user of these paging devices in the world, because obviously everyone's moved on, NHS. Like, you could, it's time to just put them away. I mean, they'll be, I don't know what they're on to next. They'll be like, oh my God, email.
Yeah.
Jesus.
Fuck.
So you get bleeped. You have your bleep number. Mine was 118. Still remember it now. And it's this little thing you carry with you, and when you're at night, you sleep in the hospital in this bleak accommodation. This is what I mean by really want to love it, to carry on working in it, because it is not easy. You're staying in these kind of derelict style, like Chernobyl hotels that time forgot in there, because it's like in the NHS, you've got a limited amount of money. So what are you going to do? What should we do, guys? Should we get this new machine that can save lives, or should we do up the doctor's accommodation so it looks like Google offices? Who votes doctor? You know, it's a no-brainer. So everything that is not essential is sort of crumbling, and you can understand why. Doesn't make it any less galling when you go into a production company that makes, like, I don't know, Cash in the Attic.
Yeah.
That is just like, you know, the, hello, can I help you, sir? This receptionist, and there's like a 40-inch TV or whatever, and there's like nibbles, and you get, you like a glass of champagne while you wait. Yeah. And then in the NHS waiting room, it's like the sign is just barely holding on with one nail because they don't have the money to waste and to burn. So you're sleeping in this accommodation, and you are you try and go to sleep, and then you put your bleep down, and you just get woken time after time after time, and often by quite mundane things. Like, doctor, sorry to mind you, I worked in Manchester, so all my nurses sound like that. Sorry to mind you, doctor. Just need you to come down, and this patient can't sleep. Is there any way you can give him paracetamol? You're like, you are calling me up to give paracetamol. Oh, my God. And, of course, rules are rules, and they're not allowed to give paracetamol. Even the patient could say to the nurse, here is £10 or whatever, a quid, please just pop down to Boots, get me a pack of paracetamol. And they're allowed to do that, but they're not allowed to dispense paracetamol from the NHS because they haven't done the course or whatever. So you're constantly getting interrupted to, like, prescribe people paracetamol and, like, laxatives. She's bunged up, doctor, she's bunged up.
Yeah, but some of those painkillers, I found out the hard way, they fucking stiff
they do.
You up.
Why don't they
give you laxatives with, like, I don't know, like your dihydrocodone?
You need to talk to your dealer.
Yeah.
Mate, it's bugged me right up. Surely you've got experience on that.
You should have given me like some bananas or some celery or something, a salad with it.
Here's two bags and some carrot juice.
Some carrot juice.
So the ones that are codeine based and morphine based, they bung you up. They slow down.
Yeah.
Let's get into medicine here, listener.
Yeah. Yeah.
They slow down your gut. Your gut's constantly moving. And then hence comes out as this, you know, poop. And then what happens when you have a codeine, it stops it moving. So everything just stops. So yes, you should absolutely, whoever's your doctor, I'll have a word. So what were you going to say?
I was just going to say, like, you're taking a painkiller, so you might not know if you're having a few, if you're hurting yourself by pushing too hard because you're on a painkiller.
It's a vicious cycle. It's a vicious cycle.
You could end up
being
hurt. Glad that it happened at an age when you're young enough to recover from it.
I wondered why you were sitting on 9 pillows.
Yo, on my side as well. I've been leaning over slightly. I need a donut.
You're on the chair, the microphone's on the floor.
Yeah.
So you go along and you have to go along and do all these things. And a lot of the things you're asking to put in Venflons, which is like the needle that you put into the vein to get access for all the medications that goes in intravenously. And I went along and sorry to my dear doctor, it's 4 a.m, I can't believe you're doing this, just need a line into Mr. whatever his name was, came down, and I'm half asleep, and this is true. One time I walked onto the ward and I looked and I was wearing my dressing gown, not my white coat. I had one hook on the back, but that's amazing, right?
That's
sick. That is how tired and go, oh my God. And you're that stage, you're like, you know what? Forget about it. Just keep walking.
Keep walking, wear it. Just be like, own it.
So I went in, put the curtains around this patient, put the line in. I'm like, but basically, there's all different colors. The goes from blue, I can't remember, which is the thinnest, to grays, which is the thickest. And they needed like a thick line in this guy. And I put it in and I was really having trouble. And that is not nice. Let me tell you now, to all the patients who I didn't get my line in first time, big sorry. Come to my show. You know, just show me your veins on the door and I'll recognize that you are a genuine case, because there'll be scars all over this. So you're putting this thing in. I was struggling, pushing me around there, and you try different areas. And then wham, got it in. I thought I'd got it in. I'm sprayed with blood, like psh, psh, pulsing blood. I'm like, oh, fuck. I've gone into his artery instead of his vein. The arteries are the ones that come away from the heart, full of high pressure oxygenated blood. The veins are like the little trickly bluey ones that are just going back slowly to your heart. And it was nuts. It was like, oh my God. It was like 3 a.m. and I'm just like, if anyone could have seen what was going on, it must look like some horror film, because I'm there with his bedside light on for light, and all you can see is this silhouette of me, like, desperately trying to stem this pump of blood coming out of this poor fella. So sorry, Mr. Carswell.
And it was at that moment you realised comedy might be a better thing for you.
Is anyone else finding this funny?
Right. So maybe I can get your medical opinion on this. This is a question we've asked a lot of our guests. We've got a very... Our strongest opinions have come from comedians. And it's there's two types of people in this world, and one doesn't know the other exists until we have this conversation. So just roll with me on this. You've had a big dinner the night before. Fibrous dinner. No codeine.
I'm there.
Right?
Codeine-free dinner.
You haven't had...
Why not try it?
I don't know if you're a morning shit after a coffee kind of guy or, like, don't know, it depends. You're in shape. You look like you have that good amount of fiber in you. So.
Dude, I'm a morning guy.
Morning guy.
You know what? Sometimes evening.
Okay, cool. Morning and evening.
I'm a morning guy. Right, I'm a morning guy. So I like that routine.
Cool. So it's your morning movement.
My MM.
MM. You've taken, it's been a substantial shite, and you wipe your ass. Are you a gentleman who stays seated during this procedure, or do you stand up to wipe your ass?
My God, I think I might be bridging the divide. I've got this sort of new half up, half down technique that I obviously will be demonstrating in my new show, because that's mostly what I've got to talk about.
Yeah.
Where you're kind of, I mean, it's also great for quad work. And you just press yourself up and you're sort of half up, half down. I'd say those are the final few though.
Really?
You don't want to be rushing into that there. You like your finishers.
Are you serious?
Sit down to start.
Okay, so you sit down to start. We don't squat throughout the whole thing.
No,
you know, you've got to be a bodybuilder.
I mean, you would just get that serious lactic acid build up. I couldn't do that.
Fair enough. So, from a medical point of view,
medical,
is it better to stand up or stay seated while you wipe?
This is classic year one junior doctor stuff.
First lesson.
Yeah, for the consultants always sat us around and go, guys. This is it. Forget everything you learned. Forget everything you learned back at med school, gentlemen. At med school, gentlemen, this is the real beans. How do you guys wipe your ass? Gentlemen, this is not a drill. Get out there. Give me four. So
four wipes.
Yeah.
Bro,
fold, keep it fold. Coming. So, shit, I've forgotten the question.
Oh yeah, so so there's like a really strong divide. So like the people that sit,
how
the fuck can you stand up? And the standers are like, how the fuck do you sit down when you wipe? Right, you're thinking about it.
I'm demonstrating. There has to be a cheek wipe lift.
You do a cheek lift, yeah,
a cheeky cheek lift.
Yeah, that's it.
Jeez, man, this is not something that I realise now that I've given this far too little thought.
Please, let's explore this together. It's a great way to wrap the episode up.
Obviously not on air, but you know what? This is you open up the richness of humanity. There's always another way to do it. There's always another thing to learn.
Yeah.
And we can all learn off each other. there's the prostrate.
Okay.
That's not the prostate. There's the prostrate.
Right.
There's the sitting down. There's the one lifter on the right. There's the lifter on the side. And then there's the kind of up and down. We've got five different techniques. And we've only been talking about this for like 45 minutes.
And there's people that go wipe in the front as well. I'm just saying.
Front wipers.
Yeah.
Jesus.
I
wondered what that mark was.
Wired a bit differently, that lad. So he went into great detail about that. But yeah. All right.
Well,
cool.
I've got kids, so this is easy talk for me, you know.
Yeah,
front wipers. I, you know, might have squirmed about this a little ago. Now you have to learn technique for yourself and onto others, you know, and you've got to pass that down. As a father, if I can teach my kids one thing, and that is a good wiping technique, son, daughter, let's sit down. What, birds and the bees chat, dad? No,
nah.
It's more than that. It's the wipe chat.
Yeah, and you hold up a white pair of pants with two brown stains, and say, "This is the enemy."
This. This. If you don't focus, this is what you could become.
Yeah.
Have I answered your question? I'm not even sure.
I don't know. I've
heard about chatting shit, but this has taken it to another level.
But I don't know. I feel like I've asked you if you're a sitter or a stander, and then you're like a hoverer.
My bet's a hoverer.
You're a hoverer. You've kind of like this whole new...
I'm just thinking. Yeah. I think I'm...
Because I'm like a leaner. I like lean.
A leaner.
So, which counts as a sit, apparently, which I'll take.
This is the sort of thing that we should have put to the country in the referendum. Forget things that don't matter, like leaving
the
EU. It's what should be the national wipe technique. And we can start prouding about that and exporting that
100%
around the world.
taking over countries, making sure that they all wipe their ass the right British way.
Right. You doing that the British way, son? That's it. Good lad.
That's it, son. Yeah, yeah. Two ply. But no, thanks for coming on the show, man. I appreciate that. And thanks for killing an hour with us, man. It's been great.
Been a pleasure.
I look forward to the show. It's nice to be talking to Simon, man. It feels real cool.
Good to be talking as myself, yes.
Will there be any more of your characters in the future? Is this the end of your other characters, or do you feel like you want to leave the door open?
Not the end. You know, there's definitely, when I do Lee, when I do Jason Bent, you know, I've flicked out a couple of little mini things recently, a couple of little vids. Jason Bent, it's great being a footballer. they always go down beautifully. And as I say, I've just come off the back of a very, very big Lee tour, the biggest I've done. So I think I'd be an idiot to when I'm still giving me pleasure and people out there pleasure, to say that they are closed. But I need to know what their wiping technique is now in character.
Just saying, yeah. When people want to know that. Lee, you stand up or sit down? Yeah,
exactly. But I'm doing stand up comedy. See the link there.
See that. Very good.
There is definitely life in the characters in the future, but for now, it's the thing that I'm concentrating on is me.
And what about pranks,
dude? Pranks,
please.
Once a prankster, always a prankster.
Please,
I was doing them at school, was doing them at university, was doing them now I'm in the real world. Is this it?
Have we reached it? Yeah. Great. You're an adult now.
Oh, brilliant.
Yeah.
Well, I love it. It's fun.
You do pay tax, right? For the record, full tax.
The pranks, of course.
Yeah, man. I feel like, bro, I feel like you play it down a little bit, your pranks. Like, I know we're about to finish the episode, but bro, like, I'll say it again, Secret Service. What did you say? You said you found out what their biggest secret was.
What did I say?
That they're shit or something like that.
When I got around them, I was like, you know, the Secret Service, their secrets, their shit.
Crazy.
That's the secret.
Please don't get shot doing that, bruv. That's the only thing that I request. Don't get shot.
He said, take him out to, he didn't say take him out. He said, get him out. He said, he said, get him out. It was brilliant, Trump. We were already outside. Everyone's like, dude, what do you mean, sir?
Yeah.
We are already outside. How can we take him outside? Shut up.
And the ball stayed there as well for like a little while.
For like 20 minutes. While the security didn't know what to do, because, you know, in the playbook, there's like, you know, what do we do if there is a terrorist? What do we do if there is a shooter? What if we do if there's no? What do we do if someone throws 100 swastika emblazoned golf balls at the president's feet while he's carried on talking? You know, what do they do? So he's talking. Yeah. They didn't want to interrupt. The sweet thing was they stayed there. So while he's talking about, you know, Mexican rapists and talking about banning Muslims, there were hundreds of swastikas around him. And all his kids got up and talked as well, and they were they were in amongst them as well. And then eventually they came along, and the beautiful thing was they got on their hands and knees, the Secret Service, and they put these swastika golf balls into "Make America Great Again" caps. It was beautiful.
Fucking make it up. Oh, that's sick, man. Well, thanks for coming on the show,
pleasure,
Simon,
pleasure.
Man. What was that, Bill? What's up?
You just mentioned about you done pranks at uni. Didn't you do a prank at uni?
Oh, yeah. Oh, we did a few pranks at uni.
Yes.
I mean, you got time for me to share? No, because you're going to have better. Have you got a good uni prank that you can share with us?
Have I got a good uni prank? No, you. I've been pretty selfish talking about my pranks. It is over to you.
I think we did a few. So we had a mate that left his room open all the time.
Amazing, yeah.
And our flat was a 5-minute walk from our front door. So you had to let somebody in, you had to walk down some stairs, across a courtyard, across another courtyard, and go to a front door.
Yeah.
So we worked out, if he was really quick, we'd have an 8-minute window to fuck with his room. So he had a date that was coming over. It was like first year.
Amazing,
it was like
amazing.
A girl he loved. And he was always like, oh mate, I'm like the ladies, man. As soon as they come into my room, it's fucking game over. And we're like, what, chloroform? Like, what? Like, what do you, what's your technique? He's like, no man, I'm just irresistible. So, he left his room open as he went down to get this girl who was going to come over and watch a DVD or Netflix back in the day. And we had a big bag of, they call them monkey nuts, but just like the peanuts that you open. So the big bag of empty shells. So we pulled back his bed sheets, poured the monkey nuts all over his bed sheets and then smoothed over his bed, took his laundry out everywhere, spread it all over the room. And then we both, don't ask me how we timed it and saved it, but at uni, I feel like I could always just knock one of these out whenever. And took a shit in his toilet.
I don't know what you're about to knock out here.
Oh, fuck, I missed the best thing.
I don't know how I timed it. Dude, what are you putting in these monkey nuts?
Mate, on site, I could do it. So go. Yeah, but no.
You're getting older now, bruv. Don't waste it. Got to save it.
Got to once a week. We took a shit in the toilet, wiped our asses, and put the toilet paper around the side of the toilet. So the mountain of two shits were there in his toilet and left the seat.
This was pre-codeine days, obviously.
Before I had my tonsils out and had the codeine. So I was smooth. Everything was running like clockwork.
This is peak.
Peak shit time. Took a massive shit, fucked his whole room up. And then I think we sat down in the living room, which was very close to his room, and we heard him walk up to his bedroom door and was like, yeah, watch a film, DVD, Transformers, have a cup of tea, open the door, and you hear him go,
Amazing.
And I think she stayed in the room for 10 minutes. Apparently 5 of that was her trying to find a part of the bed that didn't crunch when she sat on it. And then she said she wanted to use his bathroom real quick.
Dude.
Went in there and apparently came out a few minutes later and was like, yeah, sorry. Gotta go. Could it be in his future wife?
I'm just not into guys who don't flush.
Plus, your shit was two different colours. Like, when I look at it, it's like two different people's shit. Who are you? You fucking schizo shitter? What the fuck? That was one of our pranks. But nice, yeah, man. But it's nothing like beating a Secret Service, though, Bill. Fucking hell.
Yeah, but we all start with those and then build up.
Yeah, if you ever need help, bruv. You ever need a brown guy?
I need a brown guy
on site. I need a mixed race brother that can fill a toilet full of shit. Stat. Yeah, I'm your guy, bro. Call me.
I appreciate that. I don't know when that's going to come in handy. In 15 years' time, he knew. He knew one day. Dude, you're not going to believe this. How quickly can you get here and how quickly you can produce the goods? Yeah.
Take me past some McD's. I'll be there in 5. Anyway, thank you very much, Simon, for coming on the show. We'll put links to everything about you on
nice
the show.
One.
Where
nice.
Do we look for you on social media now? Do you want us to go for the Simon Brodkin account then?
So there's Simon Brodkin. There's a Facebook. There's a Twitter. There's about to be an Instagram because it's all just new. And then, heading up to the Edinburgh Festival, which is the Pleasance. So you can go to the Pleasance website and blah, blah, blah.
Cool. Well, I hope the show goes really well, man. You're more than welcome to come back when you've done a few more pranks and let us know how the show goes,
mate. Thank you, mate.
Plenty of ways to kill some time out there. Thank you for you, the listener, for killing it with us. Make sure you hit subscribe and show us some love. Give us a review. I've been Marcus Bronzy.
I have been Simon Brodkin. Thank as you. Myself.
Yeah, that's it, 100%. Thank you for killing some time with us.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.